run it up. It's Thursday, the day after a chaotic draft and a chaotic show. I think that's fair to say. Last night, Wing It Wednesday, we certainly won it. I don't know how it went, but we're back again. Will Sledd's running the Periscope. Justin Scarlett is pushing the buttons better than anybody in the industry. And I, of course, am Peyton Gallagher. Gentlemen, we actually have a good, interesting Thursday night football game this week.
Woo!
It's like they traded in the rest of the schedule so they could get this Paramount game this week. And then it doesn't quit because on Monday night, we maybe have the second best game of the week's slate. It's insane. What a time to be alive. I will say that the sports news just keeps coming. The last couple of weeks, there have been some broader points that I've wanted to get to that haven't had the oxygen because more important things are happening in real time, like the NBA draft. Certainly want to talk about Quinn Ewers at some point. His commitment today after decommitting from Texas, he commits to Ohio State. If you don't know that name yet, that's fine. He's a junior in high school, but he is the number one quarterback prospect in the nation in that class, and you will know that name. The guy can throw the ball 80 yards. That's impressive. Also, wanted to talk a little bit about, and I guess we will tomorrow, BYU and Cincinnati are doing something very interesting, and I want to see if it sticks. And actually, I might get into it a little bit here now. The year is odd. Scheduling has been made very fluid because of this in college football. So it is kind of a perfect storm to set this up, but there has been a problem the last couple of years feeling like teams that are not in the Power 5 conferences and are not Notre Dame do not have a fair shot to make the college football playoff because they probably shouldn't because they're probably on average not as good and deserving to make it. But there always is the UCF argument of, hey, we went undefeated, then we kicked the tar out of Auburn in a important bowl game, so maybe we did deserve a chance. And when there's an undefeated team, it is always kind of hard to tell whether or not they are deserving to play in that playoff, especially over teams that we assume to be better but maybe have a loss or two. So BYU and Cincinnati said we're cutting out the middleman. We're the two best teams in the country. Sorry, Marshall. Sorry, Grant Wells. You know I love you. The two best mid-major, if you will, football programs in the nation this year. They've been dominating everybody. They said, well, we might as well play each other, so that might be happening. I don't know if it's confirmed at this point in time, but that has been discussed. The inclination is that that game will happen. And I also wonder if this might set a trend of the two best teams that aren't in the Power 5, after they play their conference title games, before the college football playoff is decided. Maybe we move that announcement back a week. Maybe let's just let the two best teams in the non-Power 5 play each other in a non-Power 5 conference title game. That might give a better chance for a team like UCF to make one last statement of their case to the committee and potentially get in on the off year that you have two really good teams in the non-Power 5.
That's a pretty cool thought, honestly.
I think it's not feasible. It may be kind of worthless, especially if teams like UCF that have the chance to maybe get into the playoff lose that game. Kind of like how Florida felt about the first SEC title. Or was it Alabama? Whoever lost that game was like, we lost this game and lost a chance to win a national title, so we should never play another SEC championship. We're like 30 of those down now, so the idea worked. But it was just a thought that crossed my mind that, like, hey, maybe if 2020 has taught us anything, that if a solution is right in front of us, it might be not as hard as it looks to just kind of make that happen.
And I agree, for this year, that idea would be pretty interesting to kind of put into play. But you want to know what the long-term solution is for it?
What?
Tell these Power 5 teams to quit being scared and go play good Group of 5 teams in the regular season and get better out-of-conference matchups and give the Group of 5 teams that are really good a chance to prove themselves against some decent competition.
And that would be what I would hope the SEC would do, because the SEC, for everything you can say, and there has been a degree of leveling out across the national landscape, I still think the SEC is the best conference in college football. It's got the most resources. It should be. But if the SEC is not going to play 9 conference games like every other conference in the country, Alabama doesn't need to be playing Citadel at the end of the year. You should go out and play UCF. That's never going
to
happen.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to do that because then you risk getting a loss to a Group of Five team. No matter how good they are, they know that that knocks them out of contention for pretty much anything. But still, I mean, it'd make for a lot better football.
Justin, all I want is for people to say what they mean and back it up. So if Alabama's going to say, they ain't play nobody, Paul, we'll play them and prove that you're better. Again, I know that's a soapbox argument. It will never happen. There are a lot of reasons why it will never happen, one of which being the obvious one that Justin just brought up, that Alabama doesn't even want a chance hurting their brand by losing to UCF and giving the resistance something to actually hang their hat on and legitimize them. Anyway, digressing from that point, we'll talk more in detail about it tomorrow. I think it is something that is going to be captivating as things start to pan out across the country, and the opening may be coming bigger or smaller, I'm not sure, for one of these non-Group of Five teams to make a playoff case. I think Cincinnati's got the better chance. Here's the other thing, and I really do want to talk about the Cardinals and Seahawks and what that game means, but the other point there with this is simply that Cincinnati has looked like this dominant force, right? And BYU's not really played anybody. Cincinnati has. If Cincinnati were to win this game and stay undefeated, they would have a better resume than any team coming out of the Big Ten, based on some of the teams that they've beaten and just by the volume of games that they played. If Ohio State's only playing 6 or 7 games, the likelihood, just by volume, that they don't show up for a week is decreased because every game seems more important. And maybe that's a false argument, but you would hope the best teams would just show up every week and dominate. And that's how you prove yourself a worthy competitor for the playoff, to get a chance to play for a national title. Cincinnati's had to do that more than Ohio State would. And Ohio State's playing in a very weak conference, and the American, I'm not going to say it's the strongest it's ever been, and it's certainly not as strong as the Big Ten on a year-in, year-out basis, but you look at the teams they would have had to have beaten to get to this point, and it's pretty strong. Memphis is a program we traditionally hold in high regard. SMU's been quality over the last couple of years. They've got UCF coming up this week. That's at the Bounce House. UCF having a little bit of a down year, but still a good football team. Still a football team that beat down on Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's not great, but it's still an ACC opponent in their building. You might actually have to look at this honestly and say Cincinnati's resume might be better than that of Ohio State, especially if Indiana kind of tailspins out towards the back end of their schedule and proves they're maybe not a top 10 team. I think they are. They play them this week. There's actually a bunch of really good college football games this week, although I think 15 have been canceled, which matches the high watermark so far with this as COVID cases spike across the country, and hopefully we move closer and closer towards a vaccine. I'm going to end this discussion now here, though, because we have a limited amount of time, and I do want to talk about these Seahawks and the Cardinals, this Thursday night football game that features a lot of different underlying storylines, these undercurrents that are kind of making up for this game. Really quick question here, gentlemen in the room, Justin and Will. We've got a color rush matchup tonight, uniform-wise. The Seahawks are wearing...
Bring it back.
Right? Here's another thing. Now, I've got 5 shows left, so I'm just emptying the cartridge now. The reason why, if you weren't aware of this, teams that are the home and away team in basketball, baseball, football, etc., at least based on what I've read, I'm sure there's some other story in a book that explains this and maybe makes me sound wrong, but this is my understanding. The team that wears the dark color, whether it's a home or the road team, wears a darker shade than the white because TVs used to be black and white so that people could tell which team was which on their TV.
Yes.
We don't need that anymore. We have color televisions. So if the colors are different, people can see that. And it looks cooler. So, that's my thought and comment on this.
Tennessee and Alabama should also always play in their respective orange and crimson.
You think that the third, third Saturday in October should have one team in their home and the other team in their home uniform?
Yes. They used to do it back in the day. There's an old photo somewhere. It has to be from like the 70s. It looks awesome.
Noted. Fall colors. Makes sense. Fall football. Okay, so the Seahawks and the Cardinals. Do you guys like the action green pistachio uniforms? Because people kind of recoiled at first, but the way they look under the lights, I think it's kind of hard to deny that it's a really good look.
I mean, they look good like once a year. I don't want to see them every Sunday rolling out there with Russell Wilson looking like a green M&M, but, I mean, they're not terrible.
Will?
Yeah, I like them.
I could definitely see where people either love them or hate them, though, because they are just neon green uniforms head to toe.
I will say this. They look particularly good against the contrast of the Cardinals all black, which is what they are wearing this evening. Another side note, the Cardinals need to revamp their helmet. There's so much potential there with their color scheme and with where they play. It just needs to be redone. A white helmet is not good enough. Anyway.
For any team in 2020, by the way.
Just a plain white helmet. I think the Bills can get away with it.
I mean, I guess, kind of, but I mean, it's Buffalo, New York. What else are you going to put on the helmet?
I don't know. They had red helmets once.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about the game. So, what's going on here is that there's a lot of trends that are going to either be bucked or proven true again in this contest. One of which being the Cardinals cannot proceed after a good performance with another good performance, which we've seen throughout the year. They just beat the Bills on the Hail Mary, as it's being called, DeAndre Hopkins, the best contested catch guy in the NFL, pulling a ball away from 4-3 defenders for the Bills, making $5.7 million for Jordan Brand by just wearing their gloves in the picture.
When he's not a Jordan Brand athlete.
When he's not a Jordan Brand athlete. A free spirit. So, coming back to this game, can the Cardinals, with their second-year quarterback, get it done in Seattle? Where, by the way, no team has won this year. The Seahawks have lost 3 of 4, but they have not lost a home game in 2020. That's another trend. Can the Seahawks continue to play better at home? Even without their fans. We'll see. Can Russell Wilson have a good performance and not turn the ball over against a team with a plus 500 record? Can the Seahawks beat said team? We'll find out. I do feel like the winner of this game, depending on the performances, if both guys are in an absolute duel and go for 350 and 4 touchdowns and minimal turnovers, I think they're both still in the MVP race, but if one guy significantly outperforms the other, especially if their team wins, this thing's over. One of them is going to stay in the MVP race probably, and the other one is not. Which is crazy, but Russell Wilson's astronomical pace has been knocked off its trajectory, and Kyler Murray seems to be the guy with the meteoric rise on tap in the second half. I do think it's ridiculous when people say they would rather have right now, this season, Kyler Murray than Russell Wilson as their quarterback. I think that's a little out of line. The top four at the position, to me, is pretty clear. It's Pat, drop-off. Russ, Kyler, Deshaun, in some order.
You don't think Aaron Rodgers deserves in there?
He might. He might.
I mean, he's having a resurgent year.
He has, but then there have also been these games like the game against Minnesota and the game against Tampa where it's like, where have you been? But you can still make the same argument for Kyler. And also, Deshaun Watson's playing at like a pseudo-MVP level, and it just doesn't matter because his team is that bad. If I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm all over the place now. If I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm asking for a trade at the end of the year. I don't want to be Warren Moon. I don't want to just go put up numbers for a Houston football team, maybe win an MVP, but never really actually compete for something, because Houston's going to be pretty bad here for about 3 years. If they hire the wrong coach, I'm saying I want out. And then if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm saying, hey, I will trade you my entire draft, all 7 picks, for Deshaun Watson. Bye-bye, Ben. Anyway, with this Seattle game versus Arizona, I think we're going to decide who gets to stay in this MVP thing down the stretch. And after that chaotic ride to start the show, after I promised a less chaotic show today than yesterday's, this is Run It Up. We will come back. We'll pick games. This is Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio, WKGN.
Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out. Because it matters. This whole conversation bothers me. Big time.
Run It Up from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Gentlemen, one of these games is underway before we know too much about tonight's Thursday night football game between the Cardinals and Seahawks. Let's pick it. That's what we'll do with the middle 20 of tonight's first hour. We'll pick our games in the NFL as we customarily do on Thursday. Justin, I will start with you. Seattle is hosting the Cards, as we've talked about at length here tonight. The Seahawks are a 3-point favorite.
I'm going to go with the underdog Cardinals. Kyler Murray stakes his claim on an MVP candidacy after the big moment last week with the game-winning touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins, and compounds upon that with a big win tonight on Thursday Night Football.
Good sentence. Very strong sentence work from you there. Tough week for you last week. 8-6. Need a bounce back. This could be a big start.
Still have yet to be under 500.
That is a good goal to have. Okay, Will.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks in this one.
Okay. You're on an island. I'm going with the Cardinals. Psych! Nope, I'm going with the Seahawks. Here's why. Although I've really just trashed on Seattle kind of throughout the year, I feel like I've done an adequate job of identifying that this is a good football team, but a flawed one. I think that's fair. I also need to note this. As I said earlier, the Seahawks have not lost at home this year. Russell Wilson has looked significantly stronger at home this year. And this is a big one. The Seahawks have Carlos Hyde back in this game. He got hurt last time they played the Cardinals, and that's where things kind of went downhill. Not just Hyde, but when him and Chris Carson got hurt, and they were forced to dig deep into their backfield. We've seen a mix of guys, DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, two Miami Hurricanes in the backfield. They recently just signed Alex Collins off the street. He had not played football in a year at the professional level. They've got Carlos Hyde back. That's big because this team has not been able to run the ball in that time. They've not had a running back go for over 40 that's not named Carson or Hyde so far this year. That's hurt them. That's forced Russ to register higher on the cook meter of throwing the ball when he doesn't necessarily have to, when dictated to by circumstance and situation in game. So I think that this offense finds a more efficient blend here today, and I think they do win. That was a long explanation. Oh well. Philadelphia at Cleveland. Cleveland is the 3-point favorite. They need to win some of these games here down the stretch to keep pace in the AFC wildcard race.
I think Cleveland gets it done. I don't think Philadelphia is a good team still. So, let me ride with Cleveland. Let Baker bake.
Let Baker bake. Okay.
Shout out John Fulkerson.
Did you come up with that on your own?
I mean, someone might have said it before, but yes, it just came out of my head.
Because I've got a whole thing planned.
Letting Baker bake?
Okay. I was like, wow, we are really on the same wavelength. Okay, cool. We'll get to that later. Will.
Yeah, I think the Browns get it done too. So I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield and the Browns.
This feels like a tie, doesn't it? This feels like a game that ends up in a tie.
Kind of, but I still think the Browns are a better team pretty significantly.
I just feel like this game ends in a tie. So here's what I'm going to do here. If I get a tie in this game, that's two. I'm picking a tie.
You think the Eagles are going to tie twice in the same season?
Yes.
Has that even happened since they've had overtime? Anybody know?
I don't think.
No, I'm not sure. I could not tell you. I have an inclination to think yes. I think it happened somewhat recently, but I'm not certain. So that's just speculation. I feel like it's going to be a tie. I'm going to pick the Browns, but I'll take 0 points because I'm just so far ahead anyway if I don't get it. So
you're so humble.
Yeah, I try. Atlanta at New Orleans. The Saints are without Drew Brees in this one. They are still a four-point favorite.
I just saw your pick on this. Wow. I'm still going to go with New Orleans. I still think they get it done. I think Jameis comes in and plays pretty well. I'm kind of interested to see what he can do under Sean Payton, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Saints in this one.
Okay, so Jameis didn't look great last week, didn't inspire me. I will note the fact that, hey, he was the backup all week, didn't take any reps in practice. First time playing in this offense, really. Probably isn't going to look that great. I also note the fact that we're probably going to see a lot of Taysom Hill, which, by the way, on the ESPN Fantasy app, can be played right now as a tight end. So if he does start this game at quarterback, that's going to be a good play. So if you really want to get frisky for it, risk it for the biscuit instead of playing like TJ Hawkinson or Hunter Henry, where you're begging for them to fall into the end zone, might want to throw Taysom Hill in there. I don't know why he's only eligible for quarterback and tight end. I don't know why the two positions that he actually plays, running back and receiver, he is not eligible for. Don't ask me, but just a free tip. I'm going to go with the Falcons, though. Raheem Morris has been doing a pretty fantastic job of riding the ship for a pretty talented team that got off to a horrible start. If you just think about the games that they blew, if they just win those, if they just only blow one of those, this team's in the wild card hunt. This is a good football team. New Orleans is vulnerable right now. This is the glimmer of hope that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers needed. I'm going to go with the Falcons, out on an island on that one. Cincinnati and Washington. Washington is the 1.5-point favorite at home at FedEx Field.
Washington wins this game, but please get Joe Burrow some help.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Joe Burrow on the Bengals.
Okay. I'm back and forth on this one. Alex Smith will start the game. I'm trying to gauge what a performance that he had against a Lions team that I don't think is that good means, because he looked solid in that. The Bengals' defense is not great. And Washington has the best passing defense by the numbers in the NFL, but you didn't know that. The Bengals really only throw. Chase Young has a field day in a matchup of the first and second overall pick from the draft this past year. Number two wins the day over number one. I'm going to take Washington. Moving down the list here, Detroit at Carolina. It's a cat battle. Detroit is a 1.5-point favorite. Justin, who you got?
Battle of the Big Cats, eh?
Mm-hmm. Both wear light blue, which really doesn't have to do anything with cats. I don't know how they arrived there.
I'm picking Detroit.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I got.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Detroit as well.
All right. I'm going to go with the Panthers. I don't feel great about this, but, you know, I've talked a lot about on this show. Not a lot, but I said it a couple times, so I feel like I got to stick with it. MVPJ. I'm excited to see maybe PJ Walker play. It also might be Will Greer, which would be very disappointing to me, but it doesn't look like Teddy Bridgewater is going to suit up with this one, or for this one, rather, after taking a big hit against the Buccaneers. What would you make of that? I guess it wouldn't really change your picks because you guys both picked Detroit, but would you be excited to watch the MVP of the XFL take the field?
I mean, I think it's interesting. I like P.J. Walker whenever he was down there playing for the Houston Roughnecks, I think was XFL franchise.
He's one of the ones in Texas.
Yeah. I mean, he looked good. It intrigues me. I don't know if it intrigues me enough to watch this game, but it intrigues me.
Does it intrigue you enough to turn on Red Zone and have, like, an eye on it?
It intrigues me enough to check the box score post-game. How about that?
That's like a 3 on the intrigue level scale?
I'll give it like a 4.5.
Okay. Definitely vamping because we're flying through here and I don't have 20 minutes planned for the back end of the hour. I have 10 to 15, so this might get wacky. Pittsburgh at Jacksonville. I don't know how much I can vamp here. feels pretty straightforward. Pittsburgh's a 10.5-point favorite on the road against Jake Luton and the boys.
Yeah, Pittsburgh. By the way, how confusing is it that the Colts team we saw last week somehow lost to this Jags team that's awful?
I don't know. That feels so long ago. The Jags have, I don't think, they've not won since.
No.
So, remember when we thought the Jags might be kind of okay? They're going to go 1-15.
A long, long time ago.
They're going to go 1-15. Yeah. Okay, Will?
Yeah, after their win last week, I'm going to go with the Steelers.
Okay. I have nothing to add to that.
You want to shock the world here?
Of course I'm going with the Steelers. Duh. I will say this. Steelers did get bounced for the playoffs once long ago by the Jacksonville Jaguars. That has no relevance here. Tennessee at Baltimore. This is one of the bigger games, one of the better games. Two teams that are flailing right now, to be completely honest, and Baltimore's a 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah, that line confuses me a little bit because that means even if they played in Nashville, it's still a Baltimore 2.5 line. But anyway, that aside, I'm going to pick the Titans here. It will be my undoing. I'm going to keep picking the Titans. They're my team. That's just how this goes. And I just don't believe that much in the Ravens. But please, for the love of God, Titans special teams be better. Like, everybody wants to talk about how underperforming the defense have been. The offense has had a few struggles here and there, but that's just kind of their play style. But the special teams has been one of the worst in the league, if not the worst in the league, and it's costing them like over 10 points a game in some games. I mean, you could argue it cost them 2 touchdowns pretty easily last week on Thursday night. So please, special teams, be better.
Cost them overtime against the Steelers, and I wonder if it unravels the way it has if they go down and beat the Steelers and then start feeling like
it does not.
They're a team of destiny. You don't think it does?
It doesn't unravel like this if they beat the Steelers, okay, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page.
I think it'll be a close one, but I'm going to go with the Titans as well. They're my team as well.
How were we all picking the Titans in this game?
You expected either of us to pick against the Titans?
I mean, no, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I'm picking the Titans. Here's why. I actually have some reasons other than the shield of being a Titans fan. I just don't think that based on what we've seen so far, the Ravens can hit the Titans where it proverbially hurts for them. I don't think that they're going to be able to hit the Titans outside the numbers in the vertical passing game. I think the Titans front is going to be able to pin their ears back. I feel like this could be a big Jadeveon Clowney game going up against a backup tackle. He's going to be able to disrupt and redirect runs, and Jeff Simmons is going to eat up in the middle. Jayon Brown and Rashawn Evans are going to make a lot of plays, and the Titans' defense is strongest in the middle, between the hashes. That's where Baltimore lives. And I just don't see a world where Baltimore is able to punish Tennessee where you can beat Tennessee, and that's outside against these corners. They've been better since they got Desmond King and Adoree Jackson back, so maybe this is a moot point anyway. But I think what we're seeing with Baltimore, and I won't, this is not an original thought, it's a thought that was brought up by Mina Kimes of ESPN. The thing with Baltimore is that they lived off creating distinct matchup advantages last year. Not even just matchup advantages in the proverbial sense of my guy being bigger than your guy, and that's a matchup disadvantage. Like Gronkowski being a matchup nightmare, not that, but just arithmetic advantages of we're going to line up with 3 tight ends, but they're all really good route runners, so you don't know what we're going to do. So we may have an advantage in the run game, but you can't pack the box because we may run play action or RPO and kill you that way. And Lamar Jackson's been unwilling to run, but last year that was a matchup advantage because as a defense, you can't really scheme for that, and the matchup becomes a spying linebacker versus one of the most dynamic athletes in the game of football, not just now, but maybe ever. That just seems to be gone. It seems to be so much harder for Baltimore to move the football this year. That defense is Super Bowl good. They are genuinely maybe the best defense in the NFL. I think it's very clearly them, Chicago, and maybe LA. But the offense has just been so, so anemic that I don't really believe in them. And if they lose this Titans game, then you really have to start asking the questions of, okay, is this team even going to make the playoffs? Because it's going to be a very tight race between whoever does not win the AFC South, whether it's the Colts or the Titans, that team, this Ravens team, and the Browns. Lucky for us, a lot of those teams are kind of playing here down the stretch. The Titans will see both Cleveland and Baltimore one more time, and they'll play at Indianapolis. That'll be fascinating to watch unravel, but if Baltimore doesn't get this one, I'm sounding the alarms. I don't think they will. New England at Houston. New England is a two-point favorite. They're playing better ball lately. This feels kind of like a trappish game, though, against the Houston team. It's been pretty scrappy under Romeo Crennel, if not them winning games, competing in games.
Yeah, not scrappy enough to get this New England team down, though, after a big win last week against Baltimore. So I'll go with Cam Newton and the Patriots.
Yeah, I picked the Patriots last week, so I'm going to pick the Cam Newton and the Patriots this week.
I will say this. It feels like Josh McDaniels got tired of trying to figure out how to coordinate this passing game. He's like, I've got Cam Newton. The best part of my team's this offensive line. I've got three running backs that I trust in Burkhead, Damian Harris, and obviously James White, who's pretty accomplished in this offense. We're just going to run the damn ball. And that works for them. They're playing the team with the worst rush defense in the NFL. The Texans allow 167.4 yards per game on the ground, and that's in an NFL that slants about 60-40 passing now. That's really bad. New England has a field day on the ground. The game ends up not being close. I don't feel great about that, but that's what the information is telling you. Miami at Denver. Does Miami keep the winning ways going?
Yes.
Yes.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
What if it were snowing?
Doesn't matter.
It's a good point. It is what it is.
Is this one of those games where people come out and they're like, oh my God, Tua's never played in the snow? Or like,
maybe.
Oh my God, he's never even seen snow. Or like you know what I'm talking about? Like
whenever it snows in Tuscaloosa, right? Does
not
it?
Often. Like whenever they're like, oh my God, player's never been on a plane before this type thing. I mean, he's from Hawaii. Now he plays in Miami, played at Alabama in college.
This is a fair point.
None of those are exactly chilly places. Just side note.
Interesting analysis. Hashtag analysis.
Sabermetrics.
I will say this for the Dolphins. They're playing really well. It's been a little bit fluky, as much as I love my Miami Dolphins. They've gotten a defensive or special teams touchdown each of the last three games. That is not normal. Something can be said for a defense's opportunistic capabilities of seeing these opportunities. And yeah, the Dolphins have guys that are playmakers. Xavien Howard is one of the best gamblers in a secondary and any NFL roster. But that feels a little bit fabricated to me. I don't think that can be counted on down the stretch. The offense has been better the last two. I think I'm going Miami. I got a weird feeling about that one as well. New York at the Chargers. I've really got a weird feeling about this one.
I'm going to assume by the line that this is the New York Jets.
Yes.
Since you didn't clarify.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, Chargers.
Okay.
Justin Herbert finally gets his first win.
Yeah, second one.
Second win?
Second one.
Okay, second win.
I'm going to go with the Chargers as well.
What do you guys make of the haircut? Do you see this?
Are you talking about Herbert's haircut?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but I mean, I don't...
Am I wrong to, like, not care? I'm not just trying to, like, rain on the parade.
I mean, I don't...
I kind of like it. It's a football guy haircut.
It's just a buzz cut.
Ergonomic. It is the least maintenance possible. You can just kind of throw your helmet on and not have to worry about it.
He did have some nice flow, though, before, to be fair.
He did, but, like, that gets sweaty and it gets hard to manage. Herbert just wants to roll out of bed, get to the facility, hop in his truck. I'm assuming he's got a truck. Go to the Chargers facility and do football. I like it. Football guys being football guys. It probably has nothing to do with Herbert. He said he didn't know if he had had a haircut since 2018 or 17. Jeez.
Wow.
But, yeah. With that said, this is going to be the ultimate test of how bad the Chargers' luck can get. Because if they lose to the Jets by, like, 1 point at the end of the game, wow, I don't know who they did wrong in the universe, but, geez, I feel like if the Jets are to get a win the rest of the way, it's probably this week or maybe the game in New England at the end. I still am going to go with the Chargers. Just wanted to throw that out there. Maybe Adam Gase is even bad at tanking. I thought that nobody's been talking about so far. Okay, moving on down the list. Green Bay at Indiana. This is one of the tougher games of the week. Indiana is a 1.5, or Indianapolis, rather, is a 1.5-point favorite against the Packers.
Green Bay, please, please, Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
I, too, am going with the Packers. How are on all of these toss-up games? Are we going the same way? I don't believe in Phillip Rivers. Cool, you beat the Titans. That's Trevor Daniels' fault. Sorry. Don't think it happens against Green Bay. Green Bay's defense has to be better. At some point, they will be. I think it might be this week. I think that they might be able to get some pressure on Phillip Rivers and create some turnovers. We'll see. Dallas at Minnesota. The Vikings are really surging here. One of, pretty much at this point, only 8 teams to fill 7 spots in the NFC playoff picture. If anybody that's not in right now is to get in, it's Minnesota. And if they are to do that, they have to continue to win games like this.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Vikings. Is Andy Dalton back yet?
I don't know if they go back to Andy Dalton. Garrett Gilbert played pretty
Garrett
well.
Garrett Gilbert played decent.
I think Gilbert's going to start this week. I did see Dalton might. I have not done the research there. I didn't think it mattered because I think Minnesota's going to win this game.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm still going Vikings either way, but I just thought it was interesting.
I'll let Will make his pick, but I think I just made my position pretty clear.
I'm going to go with Dalvin Cook and the Vikings.
Yeah. Another big game for Dalvin Cook. Dallas' defense has been playing a little bit better since Leighton Vander Esch got back, but not good enough to slow down Dalvin. Dalvin and the Chipmunks for the win. Kansas City at Las Vegas. This is primetime Sunday Night Football.
Did you come up with that name? Or
I did not. Somewhere?
Okay.
My friend Griffin did. Shout out my man Griffin. He's not listening.
Kansas City revenge game. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close one, but I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Andy Reid, if you've not looked the numbers up, do yourself a favor and do that. Out of a bye week is as close to a lock as you can find. Add on the motivation that Kansas City got out-toughed and kind of embarrassed in their own building by this Raiders team earlier this year. Blow out City. Kansas City wins by at least 20 points on Sunday Night Football. Last game here on the slate, Los Angeles, the Rams at Tampa Bay. Tampa is a 4-point favorite. Last time Tampa was at home in prime time, it did not go so well. The Rams are coming off that win against the Seahawks.
I feel like the Rams go all the way across the country and get this one done in Tampa Bay. I mean, this has to be about as far as a road trip as you can take in the NFL. I can't think of a longer one off the top of my head.
Only San Francisco to Tampa, I think.
Yeah.
Or Miami. San Francisco to Miami would be the longest one I think you can do. No, Seattle to... This Seattle, is Seattle, unimportant. Miami. Continue.
Anyway. By the way, what do we do to get like 3 actually pretty good primetime games this week?
Somebody sold their soul.
Someone. I mean, this is like the first time ever that all 3 are actually... The worst one's the Sunday night game, and it's still pretty good.
Yep.
Anyway, all that said, Los Angeles Rams get the win in Tampa Bay.
I'm going to go with Tom Brady and the Buccaneers.
I, too, am going with the Bucs. The defense has been a struggle for them the last couple of weeks, and I think large part of that is that the secondary that I have highlighted all year long as a potential weakness is starting to kind of be shown as one. Tampa does this thing where Todd Bowles loves blitzing. He's one of the most aggressive DCs in the NFL. That's been known to do that normally, to go into all those zero blitz looks where you're bringing 7 or 8 guys to try and get after the other team's quarterback. You have to have corners that can be on an island. They don't have that. What you'll see and what teams have figured out the last couple of weeks is that what Tampa likes to do is they like to zone out their back end even when they bring that zero pressure. So when a corner's got his eyes in the backfield looking at the quarterback in a zone, very susceptible against the double move. Teams have been killing them down the field with that. We'll see if it changes. I don't know if these corners are good enough to just play man coverage against elite receivers. We'll see. The Rams don't really have that, though. Cooper Kupp's been bad all year. And the Rams are literally the most play-action-dependent team in the history of the game. They're not going to be able to do that against a blitz-heavy Tampa Bay front. I'm going with the Bucs. There you go. That's our game picks. We successfully vamped and made it to the time threshold, so we'll send it to break. This is Run It Up, WKGN, Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. run it up. We got about 4 minutes here. I overvamped, actually. Left myself a little bit too little time to talk about this, but I saw this today. The Browns are at least thinking about it. It's being discussed publicly. Maybe they're not in the building. Maybe they know already. But I have seen people talking about whether or not the Browns should pick up the fifth-year option on their quarterback Baker Mayfield's contract. And that struck me because I think some of the Baker slander has gotten out of control. Let's put this in context for how awe-striking this would be. Out of the last 11 quarterbacks to be drafted first overall, each one of them has had at least their fifth-year option picked up. I don't know how many have been extended, but their fifth-year option has been picked up. This is what we're talking about for Baker. Being the first guy in that list to not have that fifth year of your contract tacked on, which most programs, most different franchises around the country would love to do because your franchise quarterback is playing on a rookie deal for one more year. Of course you'll do that. And I do think that that's what Baker is. Maybe not for 10 or 15 years, but certainly longer than his first contract. This is the best quarterback the Browns have had in 20 years, and I don't subscribe to just leaving a guy in there because he's been the best you've had in a while. If you can do better, do better. I just don't know if they can. He's been good when he's not had Freddie Kitchens as a head coach last year. Orban played, asked to play in the system where he's going to throw the ball maybe less than 500 times this year. He's on track to throw the ball fewer times than he did his rookie season where he didn't start all of their games. He only started 13. Let Baker bake. We said let Russ cook. Baker's not the best he can be going under center, running play action boot, and only having two routes in the route tree or on the play. It's just not going to be his best. And he's not complained about it once, at least not publicly, because he knows that's what he needs to do based on the personnel the Browns have to win. They don't have four elite receivers. They don't have a zone scheme blocking offensive line. They have Kevin Stefanski as their head coach. They're going to run play action. They're going to throw multiple tight ends out there. They're going to run the football and take it out of Baker's hands. This is a quarterback-proof offense. This isn't about Baker. He's done his job fine, maybe a few too many interceptions, but like I said, Baker's at his best when he gets to run around and make plays on the fly outside the confines of their offense, and that's not what he gets to do right now. So, yeah, absolutely I think his fifth-year option should be picked up. He's been the leader of your team. The best the Browns have been in how long? Baker's held that together. He's done his job. He could do more than that if you asked him to, but the Browns don't because their best position group is tight end. They paid some tackles. They've got the best tandem of running backs in the league. And now without Odell, doesn't make a lot of sense for them to go five wide and start chucking the ball all over the place. Makes sense for them with the wind swirling in Cleveland to run the ball, to run play action, to not necessarily throw the ball that far down the field. That's not on Baker. Baker's not a bad quarterback. He maybe isn't necessarily what we thought he was going to be when he was drafted first overall, but that was always going to be a risk, and we really have never gotten a chance to let him develop and see him shine. Got thrown in there. The Browns were better than they were supposed to be. Next year, they kind of go all in. Trade for Odell. Sacrifice the offensive line a little bit. Joe Thomas retires. They trade Kevin Zeitler. They hire Freddie Kitchens. Doesn't go so well. This year, he's not asked to be much more than he's being. Let Baker bake. Let's see what happens. Let Russ cook. Let Baker bake. Let him throw it down the field. I bet he does okay. Run it up, hour number two. We're going to talk about the NBA draft and everything that went down last night. Back in a moment, WKGN Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio.